Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter. Hope everyone had a nice Thanksgiving week, weekend, and a wonderful day with your families and all that. I had a wonderful time. It was a rough sports weekend for me with my Boston College teams not doing well, and then capped off by yesterday's very difficult loss to the Rams at home. A lot to talk about today, and one of the things that's very much been on my mind since the beginning of the Gannon hiring, and I've expressed this before, but I think it bears expressing again, is what a, in my opinion, colossally poor decision it was to hire a defensive-minded head coach without head coaching experience, after firing Cliff Kingsbury, largely because of the disconnect he had with Kyler Murray, which the majority of Cardinal fans that I interact with on Twitter seem to feel was totally Cliff's fault. I have tried to push back on that because I don't believe it was. So it'd be interesting. I also from the start said it really, I think, wasn't in the team's or Kyler's best interest to rush back from this injury with such little preparation in the offense. I think it was setting him up to fail or struggle. And I don't think that is going to help Kyler mentally, physically, or help the organization improve his, market value around the league. If indeed it comes to Monty Ossenfort wanting to draft his own quarterback and continue to purge the roster of Steve Keim picks. And distance himself from previous coaching staffs, which is very much in play here. I mean, Monty Ossenfort was out, scouting this weekend to the big games, looking at quarterbacks has been part of his MO for MO this year and in the scouting aspect of his job. So, everything's in play right now, I'd assume. Although, I don't know how can sit there and watch this defense week after week and then continue to make the in my opinion, convenient excuse of injuries that every team is going through. And as an excuse for not showing up on defense yesterday. I mean, that same defense that took the field was virtually the same defense that thwarted the Texans in the second half of last week. Minus one key figure was Antonio Hamilton. All right. Yes, Kaiser White as well. But when Chris Barnes came in for White, he actually was an upgrade in that game. Chris Barnes has the highest PFF grade on the team right now. So it's not like we're totally suffering without Kaiser White. And I'm going to talk about Kaiser White later because in a way, he's kind of like a poster boy for the myths that Cardinal fans and pundits are creating about this team. I'll have some evidence to back this up about Kaiser, but and I like Kaiser the player. I don't like him at Mike. I've never liked him at Mike. He's a poor fit at Mike. I mean, if you look at the Mike linebackers in the NFC West, okay, All right, here's what we have. Mike linebacker. All right. My notes, I'm trying to, oh yeah. So, you know, middle linebackers, Fred Warner, 90.3 PFF, Bobby Wagner, even at his age, 82.0, Ernest Jones, we saw yesterday, a homegrown developed Ram, 71.8, Kaiser White, 58.9. There you go. That's what you're dealing with in the NFC West. I mean, who's a match for the NFC West and what we have right now? I think Jonathan Gannon is way over his head. They played four games now. They gotten whooped in all four to the tune of 118 points to 49. That's 29.5 a game they're giving up and 12.3. These are the teams you prepare for in advance when you're in a division. These are your division rivals. And the, you know, the Seahawks aren't as good as they were last year. The Rams certainly are, you know, the Rams are 3-6 in games they haven't played the Cardinals. And they've been struggling otherwise. But against us, they're like juggernauts. And part of the problem is that Gannon hasn't done his homework on the Rams offense. I mean, it starts with defending their patent and off-tackle play and the cutback that comes on it. If you can't do that, you're not going to stop their offense. It starts with that. And in two games, all right, they've given up over 300 yards rushing to Kyren Williams. On 36 carries, that's 8.4 an average. Plus, yesterday they gave up six catches for 61 yards and two TDs at 10.1 to the same player. I mean, this is now the second time you're playing them. Where are the adjustments? I mean, it was worse than the first time. I mean, then you know if you're scouting against the Rams, you know you have to cover their tight ends. You have to know that. And yet there's Higbee all alone for two TDs. I mean, what is up with that? And you know you have to bracket Cooper Kupp and you've got to get sticky on Nacua. I mean, we did not see any of that yesterday. It's just mind-boggling. And like I said, that same unit was playing good football in the second half against the Texans. So which is it? I mean, why can't the Cardinals ever build some momentum on a game? Like for their defense, thinking, oh, yeah, we really found something to fit and bring it into the next game. It's like the two games they won were like one to prove that, you know, the Gannon coaching staff could win a game. And then the second one to prove that Kyler could win a game on his way back. And now it's just back to whatever this is, tank ball. It's still a third and give up offense. No matter who's playing quarterback, it's brutal. I mean, with the exception of these nicely choreographed opening drives that Petzing has put together for his quarterbacks, which both Dobbs and Kyler have been able to execute. But then after the opening drive, it just goes out the window. You know, the scripting's gone, and it gets back to third and give up, and then fourth and give up lately, offense. And the defense has been like, good luck getting a third. I mean, you know, just chunk yards, chunk yards, chunk yards. I mean, we've just seen this just too often this season to turn a blind eye to it. I mean, and now maybe you understand a little bit why Philadelphia fans didn't like this guy. And still don't. And will never. Because, you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors going on here. It's not good, strong, fundamental football. I mean, they don't even attack. They don't get upfield. Even the Fox announcer said in the second half, we haven't seen one penetration play all day long. finally they started sending a couple blitzes far too late. I think Chris Barnes had a nice tackle for loss there. And I think one of the defensive linemen finally got the penetration. This Rams offensive line is not that good. I mean, I think talent-wise, the Cardinals have a better one. If they were playing, you know, classic Rams football yesterday with, you know, Sean McVay, who has his way with the Cardinals because the defensive coordinators who are trying to match up against them are way over their heads. Way over their heads. They don't have a plan. I mean, the Cardinals did win two games against the Rams. You know, once with Kyler in September of 2021. That was a great game where they controlled the line of scrimmage. You know, and then once with Colt McCoy last year was the last game Cliff Kingsbury won as a Cardinal in LA. They had Stafford, they had Kupp, who got injured in that game, unfortunately for him, and they also had Aaron Donald in that game. You know, and that was about the same kind of Rams team that they have this year, and they go in there and they, you know, Colt wins. 27-17 with a makeshift offensive line that only had one starter remaining, if you recall. You know, so, but here's a bizarre stat for you. You know what Kyler's record against the NFC West is? It's 5-15. Yeah, 5-15. You know what Colt McCoy's record against the NFC West is as a Cardinal? 3-1. I mean, three wins and four starts. And all three wins were on the road. The trifecta. Kyler's had 20 shots at this, five wins. And in those five wins, only one has come post-October. And that was in his rookie season against the Seahawks. With that upset up there that, you know, Hassan Reddick played so well against Russell Wilson. And then Brett Hundley closed out the game because Kyler was hurting at that point. But Kyler got us the lead, helped get us the lead, and that was a game we held on to. It was a great upset win late in the season. But since then, I mean, Kyler hasn't won an NFC West game in November, December, or January.
You said the number was 5-15?
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible because in the 2021 season alone, the Cardinals were 4-2 against NFC West teams.
Yeah, Colt had two of them. Huh.
It's kind of remarkable that, that so many of their games over the past few years, because they play six a year. That's actually incredible.
Kyler was 2-2 that year in NFC West. And both those losses were just really tough. The Rams lost at home. We got, you know, Aaron Donald went off and sacked Kyler like five times. And then which set the tone for the later playoff game. And then the just brutal week 17 loss at home to the Seahawks, who had nothing to play for. And Russell Wilson, you know, was like lighting up the Cardinals defense in his last game as a Seahawk. You know, that was just mind boggling. And the Cardinals had the NFC West division on the line. They win the NFC West. Unbelievable. Yep. Unbelievable. And that would have changed the whole, they would add a home playoff game. That could have changed the whole tenor of what transpired over, you know, instead losing to Pete Carroll. And that's the thing about this division, gang. I mean, you have to think of who's coaching in this division. I mean, you know, and people say, well, the Cardinals can't get any, you know, coaches with experience, whatever. Nobody wants to coach in Arizona. They got to figure something out, because coming in with rookie head coaches and now like the youngest staff, I mean, they're just, Jonathan Gannon is no match for Pete Carroll. He is no match for Sean McVay. And he's certainly no match for Shanahan. I mean, it's just not going to happen. You could make all the excuses you want in the world, and it's not going to happen with Kyler at quarterback. You know, it's just not. Kyler's psyched out against these teams, and you know, he's 5-15. They know how to, they prepare for him. Notice yesterday how the Rams put up a picket fence in how they rushed Kyler. And they also know, you know, in other words, they also know that at this point in Kyler's career, he's no longer going to try to escape up the middle. So if they keep a picket fence, they know they can just get a hand out and knock him down if he tries to escape up the middle. But they stay contained in their rushes. And what did they sack him, like 5 times? They got him spinning around in the middle of the pocket. I mean, and this is, and here's the thing, and this is what I'm posting on Twitter right now, is Raheem Morris had less to work with going into this season defensively than Jonathan Gannon did. You know, other than, you know, Aaron Donald. I mean, you know, obviously he's a game wrecker, but the Cardinals were doubling and triple teaming him yesterday, and the Cardinals have beaten a Rams team with Aaron Donald twice before. You know, but look at the personnel. I mean, Ernest Brown, defensive tackle. You ever heard of him? He was a 5th-round pick in 2022. Kobe Turner, a 3rd-round rookie. Huge impact in that game. Sack Kyler, a 3rd-round rookie. Why aren't we drafting guys for the line like that? Then you have Aaron Donald, 1st-round in 2014 Hall of Famer. Byron Young, 3rd-round rookie, leading the all rookies in sacks at the defensive end position. He had another one yesterday. I think he's up to 6 now. Ernest Jones, 3rd-rounder in 2021. Like I mentioned him earlier, he's, you know, he's got a 71.8 PFF grade in the middle of that defense. You know, they're getting play out of their Mike linebacker. Plus, he's really, as we have learned, he's very good in coverage. I mean, he had a near interception yesterday, and he had that one against Kyler on the goal line when Kyler tried to throw to Ertz that he ran out for a big interception. And then the Cardinals played at home one of the last times Kyler played the Rams at home. You know, then you got, anyone ever heard of Charles Roseboom? He's their other inside linebacker. He had a one nice play in yesterday's game. He's a college free agent in 2020. Michael Hecht. Anyone ever heard of him? College free agent 2020. He's their other outside linebacker. Akello Witherspoon, who's bounced around, you know, free agent. He's one of their starting corners. He made the nice play, breakup play on the throw to Dortch, if you recall, the long throw that, you know, the announcers mistakenly said it went off Dortch's fingertips. Actually, Witherspoon broke it up. Jordan Fuller at strong safety, a 6th-round pick in 2020. Russell Yeast, ever heard of him? 7th-round pick in 2022 playing free safety.
That's one of the ones I have literally never heard that name until right now. I literally have never heard of Russell Yeast.
Right. You know who their other cornerback is? Darion Kendrick, 6th-round pick, 2022. And their nickel corner is Kobe Durant, 4th-round pick in 2022. So the Rams, who gave up all those picks to get Matthew Stafford, are making much more out of their middle-range draft picks than the Cardinals. I mean, let's not forget, Jonathan Gannon going into this season had LJ Collier, Kevin Strong, Lecky Fotu, Carlos Watkins, Dante Stills, Zaven Collins, Chris Barnes, Kaiser White, Dennis Gardeck, who's he's the only player up in the leaders of anything in the NFC West. In fact, let me stick with him. NFC West edges. He's second PFF grade of the group at 78.6 behind Nick Bosa at 93.0. Boye Mafe is at 76.6, and Byron Young, who we saw yesterday, is at 66.8. That's bound to go up because of the good game he had yesterday. So Gardeck's one guy, and previous coaching staff didn't want to rush him from the edge. So that's just bizarre. Marco Wilson. I mean, look at this secondary, who showed great flashes last year. I mean, look at that Saints game. Why can't they coach him up? Buda Baker and Jalen Thompson, one of the best safety tandems. Now, for the Rams having Aaron Donald, we got Baker and Thompson at safeties, game changers. Catrell Clark, they had, Garrett Williams coming off the IR at some point. Antonio Hamilton had the best cover grade on the team last year, but for whatever reason, Gannon didn't want to go with him. And then when he finally did go with him, look what they got out of him last week. Unfortunately, it was a Pyrrhic victory for Hamilton because he, pulled his groin on that great interception. But I haven't even mentioned, here's other guys he had talent to work with. A guy named Isaiah Simmons. A guy named Cameron Thomas. This is a first-round pick, Isaiah Simmons, the number, a top 10 pick. Cameron Thomas, a third-rounder. Myjai Sanders, a third-rounder. This cupboard wasn't bare by any stretch of the imagination. And because the defense is struggling, even the Fox announcers were like, oh, well, they're so beat up. And this, everybody's beat up this time of year. And, you've got to work it with who you have, and you have to coach these guys up. But here's the thing with me and Gannon is that they're just not, as a defense, it's not an attack-style defense. Up front, it's a thud, lack of penetration, kind of just try to hold up your man off the snap. That is not working, okay? That's why you see Cardinals defensive tackles 5 yards downfield making tackles, which, to their credit, they're not quitting on the plays. But if they're going anywhere, it's backwards, not forwards. You have inside linebackers who lack instincts and lack the physicality to play and don't run downhill to the football often or nearly often enough. Meanwhile, you have an edge guy in Zaven Collins, who should be among the lead leaders in tackles right now. I mean, if Jordan Hicks was for the Cardinals, imagine what Zaven Collins would be, where he's best suited to play Mike. See, that's why Chris Barnes is playing better in the middle, because he's big and physical. You need someone with physical presence in there, or impeccable instincts if you're smaller. I mean, or both, like a Fred Warner has both. I mean, you've got to be tough and physical in the middle to be a Mike in the NFL. You can't be a converted safety. It's just not going to work. You're not going to hold up physically, which, of course, Kaiser White hasn't. So, this is just faulty decision-making. Josh Woods has been a great special teamer in this league. But every time he's played linebacker in the NFL, he's graded out very poorly. And I mean, you know, I mean, he's a high effort guy, but again, he's a smaller inside linebacker. You know, where, and he's just out of, he's just not a physical prototype for the position. And I mean, he's got a 45.3 PFF grade with a 44.0 run grade and a 30.0 tackling grade and a 50.7 coverage grade. And he's not getting the job done. He's the Marco Wilson of inside linebackers. And I'm sorry, but whoever made that decision to invest so much time and effort into Josh Woods as an inside linebacker, I mean, I knew coming in that was a, you know, he was talking about, I'm getting my first chance to play. Well, my goodness. I mean, let's go down the line and look at it, his career. His PFF grades. Last year in Detroit, 37.6. When he did get his chance to play. 2021 in Detroit, 55.9. I mean, and then 41.1 the year before. You know, it's just the mindset, the thinking of prototypes in a defense is so awry here. It gives me no confidence at all in Gannon as an under, you know, in an understanding defensive prototypes. You know, and not being able to work with Isaiah Simmons and get him out of, you know, work with him and get him involved really. Pissed me off and still does. You don't give up on a guy like that. I mean, he's not the first guy to dog it on a couple of plays and during the preseason. We've seen Isaiah Simmons stick guys at the goal line like he did in the 49ers game. I don't know if we win that home 49ers game in 2021 without him sticking Trey Lance at the one-inch line with who's the other inside linebacker I really liked, who good tackler, who couldn't hold up physically. I'll think of his name in a minute. But what a great play that was. I mean, Isaiah Simmons is a world-class talent. And I think one of these years somebody's going to get it out of him. I mean, he's playing well for the Giants in a limited capacity because they're two inside linebackers are the two best players on defense. But he's grading out really well. I mean, in the times that he's played. I mean, I'll just check it right now. It's the, you know, he's right up. He's their fourth highest grade at 73.2. You know, he's got 23 tackles. That's more tackles than Zaven Collins. With as many snaps. Zaven Collins has less than 23 tackles on the entire season in 11 games. It's just bizarre that this is, we're allowed to, that we have to be put through this, through guys that, you know, Steve Keim drafted, but they weren't bad players. They just weren't coached well enough. I mean, and, you know, and given enough confidence by the coaches, and should have been playing from the get-go, and they got yo-yoed by Vance Joseph, you know. So, you know, but he's been really good in coverage, 84.6. We could use a little of that, you think? You know, Wink Martindale's got him on good matchups. And he's not throwing them all over the field against a wide receiver one play or a running back the next play or a tight end the next. No, he gets consistent matchups, and he's delivering. So, you know, other guys, Cameron Thomas should be farther along where he is. They haven't carved out a role for him properly. He's a baller. He's one of the best 11 defensive players on the group. You know, yesterday they started three rookies in the secondary. Garrett Williams at nickel, and they had Catrell Clark in Wilson's spot, and then they stuck with, you know, Starling on the other side. you know, they had their moments. They played hard. I give them that. And it was a good effort all the way around. Where the Cardinals got absolutely just destroyed was in Gannon's zones. Again, like at the goal line, that zone was absurd. All Higbee had to do was slip in behind it. And you had, you know, I mean, to Jalen Thompson's credit, is he at least noticed that Big Higbee was coming and then was just reacted too late. And the other player who should have reacted was Buda Baker, but he didn't see him coming. And when you're playing zone in the goal line, if a guy's coming near you, you got to pick him up. And this is something these Cardinals don't do with Gannon. And they didn't do it with Joseph either. I mean, there are zones that are coached up well, and there are zones that are just, you know, just stand around like cardboard figures. The latter applies to this Gannon defense. And that's why it really upsets me that we hired a defensive coach who's just so flawed in how he runs a defense, you know, in a year where Kyler Murray was the biggest issue. And then the Murray-Petzing thing, they come out of the game, Murray's behind center, and he's running bootlegs. I thought a few times, I mean, he had easy throws to McBride right away and, you know, even could wait and still completed to McBride because, and here's what happens, is it freezes the defense thinking like, is Kyler going to run off this? Is this a bootleg where he's going to run? So they kind of half play their man and half play run, and then you get defenders in no man's land. And the Cardinals were successful in doing that. And Kyler put some good balls out there. And then, of course, you know, Kyler was great at the goal line, you know, on that third down play and got in off the, you know, the read option, which he's really good at. I mean, it was looking good. Great answer to coming back from the Rams, just marching downfield at will, scoring, going up 7-0. Game was 7-7 with penalty, and they did the tush push with Clayton Toon. That was awesome. That worked. Got up 8-7, pretty much all downhill from there. And, you know, I mean, the worst part for me was I get the going for fourth down, but the offense was kind of sputtering. And that fourth down at the middle of the field, with the score 14-8, with like 2 minutes left in the half, or close to it, was just brutal. I mean, maybe 4 minutes left in the half, but it's narrowing down. I mean, if you punt it down deep and try to play defense and get the ball back one more time, instead they go for it and they, you know, Kyler misconnects on a late throw. That's the thing with Kyler, is his throws are late. Even the bomb on, you know, to Hollywood Brown, where it was out of direct from center snap, play action, straight drop back. You know, again, I don't, from that, from a straight drop back off of play action, it's too late. It's just too late. It's a better play where you catch it out of the shotgun, take three steps and let it go. I mean, it's just too late. Kyler's late balls have been underthrown. And as we know, Hollywood Brown is not a 2020 guy. He's just not. And I don't think he ever will be. Because if he was, he could have come down with that catch because the ball was on his hands. But, you know, the defender was there in plenty of time to try to, once it touched Hollywood's hands, to try to break it up, and he did. You know, that was either, you know, I think it was Jordan Fuller who broke that up, one of those Rams unheralded safeties. Here's the other thing, is that Hollywood's, you know, said that he's in contract negotiations with the Cardinals right now, and, you know, during the week. Yet all week he's not practicing with the team. He's a game time decision. You know, I mean, he and Kyler did hook up a few times. that's good, but it's not ideal for going into a game and coming in cold, especially when they haven't had that connection. You know, and not last game was really off. I mean, you know, really off. I mean, the Panthers just, this just in, just fired Frank Reich because he's not getting much out of the rookie quarterback. I mean, how about Jonathan Gannon? What's he getting out of this defense? I mean, if you're a defensive guy and you're sitting there standing aloof and alone on the sideline, or the other head coach is working his ever-living ass off, calling plays and this and that. Here's the other thing about Gannon, as they reported yesterday, which reminded me, is he comes into the Cardinals meeting for the head coach and says, don't hire me if you want me to call plays. I mean, whoa, really? Okay. So now you're going to hire someone who never has, which he's done, to run your offense. And then you're going to stand there aloof on a sideline, not interacting with anyone, while Sean McVay is kicking your ass left and right because you haven't prepared for his offense. I mean, to me, that's a fireable offense. I mean, that combined with how about spending a third day of minicamp going over your rivals and how you're going to defend them? Plant the seed then instead of calling the thing off. How about bringing the rookies into rookie camp like other teams do to develop them as fast as the Rams are developing their players? Now, I don't know if they brought their guys in or not. I don't care. Their players are getting developed faster than the Cardinals. And, you know, I mean, they're getting good play out of their play, good enough play to now be 5-6 and still in playoff contention. And, you know, I mean, I laid out the Rams' list of no-name players other than Aaron Donald. Same holds true for Houston, you know. You know, they've got a couple marquee names now with Will Anderson. We know about the trade. And they've had Derek Stingley Jr., who's a young player to build things around. But Derek Stingley Jr. also has missed like four games. And they're winning. And they've had a chance to, you know, actually take the lead in their division yesterday and had a great game. I mean, what a game they played back and forth against Jacksonville. I don't know if you saw that game. I thought it was great. I mean, but they don't have a bunch of household names either. And they had as pretty much as poor defense as the Cardinals had last year. So, but D'Amico Ryans comes in there. You know, someone was telling me on Twitter, but they have Sheldon Rankins. I mean, Sheldon Rankins. Sheldon Rankins. Really? That's a household name for you? Sheldon Rankins? Let's see what his PFF grade is. That one really caught me off guard.
I mean, he's a guy who's been around for a while, but I've right. never really thought of him as much of an impact player.
62.4, 38.8 run defense, 26.9 tackling. I mean, yeah, it's a real stretch when you have to pull out, you know, for my money, Kevin Strong Jr.'s better player. I mean, he's pretty much a no-name, but not to us now. And Carlos Watkins was playing better than that until he got hurt, unfortunately. You know, but these Texans, they're a bunch of no-names, too, on defense. I mean, you know, Malik Collins is a defensive tackle who's been meh, you know. I mean, he's 55.1, 37.7 versus the run. You know, not that great. I mean, you know, so then you have Jonathan Greenard, the edge player. He's having a really good year. See, they developed their edges over there He wasn't that great before. Now he's at 75.5. He's up to like 7.5 or 8 sacks. I mean, they're getting great quality from him because, you know, Will Anderson's been good against the run, but he's only has 3 sacks. And his pass rush grade is good at 72.4. So he's getting, has 38 pressures, which leads the team. So that's good. And they're getting good value out of him. The Cardinals are getting similar value out of Gardeck. And higher PFF numbers in the pass rush. Yeah, and they brought in Jimmy Ward, who's a solid player. He's only played in 6 games. I mean, Shaq Griffin, he's bounced around. Steven Nelson, he was on the Steelers, I think, last year. Steven Nelson, where was he? You know, he's on the Eagles. Yeah, instead of going rejoining JG, he wanted to go to Houston, and he's having a good season, 76.8. Would have been an upgrade for us, obviously. But I looked at his grades in Philly last year, and they were not as good as Antonio Hamilton's. Nelson had to play the slot a lot because you're not going to get in there much ahead of the two, you know, Slay and
Bradbury.
Bradbury, exactly. So, but that Houston defense isn't, you know, Tavarius Thomas, Tavier Thomas, the former Cardinal, is playing the slot at a high level, 78.1. So, I mean, and Christian Harris, D'Amico Ryans is getting really good play out of him, although he's not a really good run defender, but he's good in coverage at 81.1. He's 38.1, in run defense. But he's filling a role as a cover linebacker. So, I mean, he's getting quality play. Good enough play. I mean, the one prize free agent they had was Denzel Perryman. But he's out. He's only played 6 games, and he's got a 44.7 PFF grade, a 47.2 tackling grade, and a 30.5 coverage grade. So Henry To'oto' has been in his spot, but he's at 42.1. So they're not getting much out of their middle linebackers either, but they're getting enough quality play. And we saw them last week. They play hard. I mean, D'Amico Ryans is, you know, one of the best defensive coaches in this league, hands down. I mean, he has guys play like piranhas and get into the football. And just don't see enough of that from Gannon's defense and just the strategies in Houston, we saw the way that they're coached to get upfield and disrupt plays. We're not seeing that on a consistent basis, or sometimes for whole halves, we don't see it at all from a Gannon defense. So I don't know what they're, you know, I mean, this is a big dilemma now because, we're hearing all this praise about Monty Ossenfort, and the great trade. I think the one he pulled off and was all caught on tape and everything endeared him to Cardinal fans everywhere, including myself. But since then, I mean, I still have questions about his draft. I mean, if you're trading back up at number 6 to draft a right tackle, you drafted the wrong one. For right tackle. If you're at 6 to draft a left tackle, you got the guy. That whole scenario, too, makes absolutely no sense to me. Absolutely no sense. I noticed, too, it was quick of DJ to run over to Sean McVay after the game to make his presence known. I think DJ's probably recruiting already for next year, where he's going to wind up. But to twist this whole thing around for DJ this year was just, and to, you know, you've heard me talk about that. I, you know, it's just galling.
And I like the. Sorry, I was going to say you mentioned the right tackle thing a second ago. If they had stuck around at 12 to pick a right tackle, right. Is the person you're referencing Broderick Jones?
Yes.
Okay.
He's a beast. And I like Darnell Wright. And, you know, PJJ's, you know, DeMond. Oh, what's his last name for the Browns? DeMond, not Young. Wait a minute. I'll figure it out. The big mammoth right tackle's having a great year for the Cleveland Browns. Maybe you can look it up. He's their right tackle.
DeMond. Yeah, but Harris. But the idea is that, DeMond. Yeah, they could have had other players.
Yeah. I can figure it out right now. Let's go here.
DeJuan Jones, is that who you're talking about? It's DeJuan Jones. Right?
There it is. That's it. That's who I'm talking about. Yeah. He's having a great year. But Broderick Jones, he's like the ultimate right tackle. And I'm just so sick and tired of Cardinals management screwing up positions. And you know, it's just galling at this point. Like, draft a guy and put him in. You know, like yesterday, I would have put Catrell Clark on the slot and Garrett Williams out on the perimeter. That's where it should be. I mean, come on. Or put Starling in at the nickel and have Williams and Clark. But Williams should be playing, you know, the cornerback position, the regular position, in my opinion. I also have this instinct about Williams that you put him pretty much anywhere in the secondary, even at free safety. He's got instincts. He's a player and someone worth really helping and building around. But, you know, I think he's more than just a nickel corner. I think you can slide him down a nickel occasionally when you have a matchup you want, but he should be a starting corner left or right. I think left would be great. Instead of Starling there, I would have put him in. It's good to see Catrell Clark back. Played his butt off. He tied for the lead in tackles with Buddha, I think, for 9. You know, the kid he brings energy. Yeah, they both had 9. Both had 6 solos. I mean, look at this defensive difference, okay? Tackles for loss, which we were talking about. How about getting upfield and making it? And Catrell had one of the 2 tackles for loss. Remember that play? He came up and stuck someone on a play that the Rams later scored a touchdown on, a little screen. Oh, that was just galling again. But the Rams had 4 sacks, Cardinals none. They had 6 tackles for loss, Cardinals 2. They had 10 pass deflects defense. Cardinals had 1. And they're that much better at defense than the Cardinals? No, sir. No. All right. But it's how they're coached and it's how they've been developed and it's how they play well together, well enough together that, you know, they put the clamps on Kyler and that offense yesterday. And it wasn't good until they took the starters out. And so, and why at that point Kyler Murray's still in the game with a reported hand injury that they said at halftime, he's fine. And then in one of those weird sack plays where Kyler kind of took a dive, it looked like he tweaked his knee. He was limping around after the game. I don't know why. There's no one in the organization who has the prescience to kind of see this isn't a good idea. I mean, you know, to give a guy with such little preparation this kind of cameo. I mean, what is Kyler doing now? Is he auditioning for his own job? What are they doing with him now? I mean, when he came back, I said to people on Twitter, you know, let's get something straight. Because people on Twitter were like, oh, it'll be great to see Kyler light up the scoreboard and we still lose and keep our draft position. I was like, no. It'd be so unfair to the team and to Kyler to have him come back with another purpose than to win games. If Kyler's coming back, it's to win games and build confidence, not only for the team, but for him and the coaches. That's the only way this thing makes sense. I mean, it was Jonathan Gannon who said to all of us, don't get it twisted. We're going to win games. Okay? Those were his own words. So you can't have it both ways. And the way that defense played yesterday, just awful. Just awful. Now, the thing about the defense the week before, same thing in the first half. But they pulled it together in the second half. And aside yesterday from Jalen Thompson's interception, you know, which was nice, but the slip, I mean, it's right in his hands. Take it and go. I mean, unbelievable. He just got tripped up. Because that's a pick six. There was no one in a line to catch him. And Matt Stafford wasn't going to catch him. So, unfortunately, you didn't get a house call on that. But Thompson played well in the second half last week. This week he played better in the second half. He had a rough first half. His PFF grade's not going to be very good. I mean, he lost Higbee twice. The first one was he just took a dive. Higbee was wide open. I think it was zone, but that he had flat. And here's another thing that Gannon does a lot is he have linebackers from their inside spots covering tight ends. I mean, which you're automatically giving them the out pass every time. Automatic. You can't get any leverage on them. So what it should be is you have to line up a strong safety on the tight end every time and, you know, play bump and run with a guy like Higbee, or he's going to beat you. And they didn't do that. And Thompson wasn't a part of that. Although Thompson was playing strong safety at times, they didn't put him directly on him. So, you know, you're asking an inside guy, how about that time that, you know, Josh Woods got beat on an easy out pass for, you know, a TD? I mean, or a big gain it was. I mean, because you can't physically cover a guy. Or it was against Kyren Williams out of the backfield. I mean, Kyren Williams got the head start. You just can't cover a guy like that. It's just so unsound and poorly defined and orchestrated and assigned. You can't make assignments like that and expect them to succeed. It's all about, like the coaches always say, putting the players in the position to help them best succeed. And for an inside linebacker, giving him man coverage on a tight end who's lined up 6 feet to your right, knowing that a simple out pass is going to be wide open every time, is just not getting it. It's just poor decision making and poor planning and poor assignments. So, I mean, I think the Cardinals have to revisit this whole decision. You know, I know this, at least if they're going to stick with Kyler, you got to get an offensive coach in here as head coach who can, you know, I mean, Kyler is not going to, we've already seen, if you kowtow to Kyler or you just let Kyler have his way or you give him the red carpet, it's not going to work. you need someone. I mean, it'd be fascinating to see what Sean Payton would have done with him, and look to see what Payton's doing with Russell Wilson right now. The Cardinals need a pro coach to coach Kyler. Otherwise, you know, you're just wasting. And even if he gets a pro coach, the biggest question is, can he hold up for 17 weeks and five more weeks in a playoff, 4 to 5? You know, I mean, so far the answer to that is clearly no. And he's 3 games back, and now, you know, has incurred, looks like, a couple of injuries. And we know that post-injury Kyler has not played well, like he normally does. So, I mean, there are all those question marks at stake here, and something's got to take place. But, oh, boy. I mean, I know it's tempting for people to think, oh, well, we'll draft Marvin Harrison Jr., and everything will be better, and, you know, year later. And I understand how people could get excited with that. But, you know, if this defense is being coached like this and it is in such inexperienced hands, and I'll get back to this. I mean, if you're a competitor and you want to win, don't you want the ball in your hands? Don't you want to call the play? Don't you want to be the guy in charge? I mean, how can you just stand there aloof on the sideline, you know, alone, and watch this shit happen? I mean, they got their asses whooped play after play. Kyren Williams just going off. And you're just standing there. Well, McVay's got a sweat running up and down the sidelines, calling plays, calling guys over. You know, the disparity of those two images and those two approaches to coaching, in my mind, was the disparity between a winner and a loser. And, you know, I mean, the days of Tom Landry standing with a hat all alone, you know, aloof, or a Bear Bryant up in the press box, are long gone. I mean, nobody gets to do that anymore. I think it says something about Gannon that it was a stipulation for him to not have to coach the defense and to be the head guy and alone without any, you know. It'd be different, okay? It'd be different if, you know, he said, okay, well, I'll bring in a real pro like, you know, Zimmer, Mike Zimmer, or someone he's worked with who's had experience, then it's a whole different thing. Or if he brings in an experienced offensive coordinator too, someone who's got experience. But instead, the combination of hiring an inexperienced head coach who's got these, like, chaotic visions of himself and how to coach. I mean, it's just bizarre. He's so way beyond his element in the NFC West. You know, and then to compound it by hiring totally inexperienced coordinators. I said at the time, and I couldn't help it, this is a recipe for abject failure. And I'm sorry, but there's no one in this organization that seems to have the prescience to see this in advance. I mean, it's one thing before the season to say, well, good, well, everything, this is a tank season and we'll just be awful and everything, and so we can get the top draft pick and this and that. But my argument to that was, well, we got to sit through 17 games of this. You know? And it hurts. I mean, yesterday was just, I mean, you just want to crawl in a shell and you know, cringe. And it hurts because it's the Rams. You know, going into the game, I had some hopes that, you know, they were going to learn from the last Rams game and Gannon would have a plan and have adjustments. Instead, I learned that he had nothing, no plan, no adjustments. It's like they never played him before in a division rival at home. You know, and then this whole thing with these black uniforms that look absolutely stupid for Cardinals, that we got our asses whooped every time we play in them. I mean, there's somebody ought to be a little superstitious in the building. Like Bidwell last year. We're first time ever in franchise history after seven games on the road. We're 7-0 on the road. And he changes the itinerary. He brings in a new jet. And I go, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. And lo and behold, what happens? We got spanked by the Lions. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, if you got these black uniforms and you absolutely lay an egg every time you play in them, why? What's the point of wearing them? And they don't make you look like Cardinals anyway. It's just, you know, I said it on the last time. I'm trying to figure out who we, the last time we played. It was in early October. It was the first game in October. Oh, yeah, the Bengals game. We got whacked in that game. In both these games, wearing black, just absolutely whacked. Jeez. And the one game that probably made sense to wear them was the we're near Halloween with the Baltimore game. We didn't wear them there. But here's the thing, too. You've won both your home games in red. You won your last home game with Kyler in red. So why is there someone in the building going like, you know, gee, maybe these Reds are, you know, trending in the right direction? I mean, that might be seem silly to some, but it has a lot to do with image. You see these black crows playing like lame ducks. I mean, yesterday it was a lame duck game from start to finish. Kyle, your thoughts?
I am not as superstitious as you are on the jerseys. However, I also am not the biggest fan of the black jerseys. It's also with the new design, it's hard to read the letters on the back of the jersey too, which is a little obnoxious. Right. But yeah, not for the fact that they always get waxed in the black jerseys, but black jerseys, not my favorite. Also, glad that Michael Carter got some run at the end of the game a little bit. I was hoping that he would get to play more because I was surprised that the Jets let him go. And, you know, he said on the way out that, you know, there's some issues behind the scenes with the Jets, which is the same thing that Mecole Hardman said when he left for Kansas City. Glad that he's getting some run because he hopefully will be around longer than just the rest of this season. That's a great pickup that they had. That was a pretty good move. Just a small little detail that I picked up on.
No, and he had four carries for 19 yards, 4.8. Never really got the running game going, but he came in and gave us a spark. He had four catches for 15 yards. 3.8 is not great, but he is a threat out of the backfield. I'm really glad you mentioned that because I thought he was a really good pickup. I think this kid Lopez is a keeper too. He is a good pickup. Stills is playing at a high level. You know, there are guys that are younger guys that are impressing. Lopez had three tackles again yesterday. Zaven Collins, the whole game, two tackles. And one was at the very beginning. Victor Demakije, one tackle. The kid, Devad Wilson, looked way out of his element in this game. Garrett Williams, five tackles yesterday. Chris Barnes had seven. Jalen Thompson had seven. Barnes had one of the only two tackles for loss. So, you know, and then on the other side, I'm glad you mentioned Carter and, you know, James Conner, six rushes for 4.5, but was, you know, an afterthought. I mean, he didn't, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, once the Cardinals got behind, I guess, you know, they just decided to go shotgun and get away from the running game. It's one of the first games this year they've had under 100 yards. They only had 73. And Kyler Murray only had one run for 2 yards. So, I mean, that was his touchdown.
Which was a design run, Kyler, so they didn't have any scramble plays or any, you know, buying time by rolling to the left. It just didn't happen, which, you know, I think was probably because they were down 21-8 going into the second half.
Right. Yep. Just disappointing special teams. The penalty on the end of the field goal at the end of the first half, which, you know, because it's an offensive penalty, just ended the half. And when Prater had made it, and then Prater's missed kick later, you know, but setting up, you know, like running third and give up offensive plays to just set up a 57-yard field goal is just comical at this point. And plus being behind enough in the game where you really have to go, you know, attack downfield. Blake Gillikin redeemed himself on his first punt was really poor, but it was a high snap, which had to jump up and get. So that could have affected it. We still ended up with 45.6 average, which is good. He's been averaging in the 50s. Then he had that great fake punt. And boy, Jeff Rogers is really good at calling those. He's got good timing and, you know, he rarely misses on those. And I don't know if Gillikin had it in him, but he obviously does. Next thing we'll have to find out is whether he has an arm to throw a pass off of that. Imagine he might. So, Ojulari had 5 tackles, 2 solo yesterday. But, you know, no one got to Stafford. Stafford's, you know, sitting duck in that pocket. He doesn't have the wheels he used to have. Against a Rams offensive line that, you know, let me put it to you this way. Go to the stats. I mean, to put it in perspective, the their pass blocking grades on the season until yesterday was 25th in the league. Cardinals is 23rd. And who dominated their game? Their offensive line. Their run blocking is 8th at 85.5. Or their run game is graded at 85.5. Let's go with the run blocking. They're 16th, 61.6. Cardinals are 29th, 50.2. Even though that's the weird disparity, is their run game. Run grades, or Cardinals are still second in the league at 91.2. And the Rams are 8th, 85.5. So, but Cardinals blockers get little credit for the run game. It's probably because it's two things. Because the Cardinal quarterbacks have been getting, you know, a lot of the yards on scrambles. So the offensive line doesn't get credit for that. In fact, it's almost a demerit because if they're scrambling, that means that they're not protecting well enough. But then it's the run after contact that Connor, I mean, always dragging defenders. You know, he's just something special. And I don't want to hear from anyone, you got to renegotiate his contract. No. I mean, he's just too special. You need a guy on a team like that who brings toughness and leadership. And he's bringing both. You know, whatever. Let's take a look. Kyle, can you look up James Conner's contract figure for next year? Let's see what that is. But everybody's saying they got to cut him or get him to take a pay cut. There's nothing about his play this year that warrants a pay cut. He's up in the leaders. Go ahead.
Okay, so right now, most of his guaranteed money has already been paid out after this year. So he would make next season, let's see. He has a base salary of $3.7 million, signing bonus of $2 million, a roster bonus of $1.5, which I think all in all will add up to $8.5 million on the cap. If they let him go, it's a $3 million dead cap hit. So that's where they're at right now. It's about $8.5 million in total.
Yeah. And what was his total this year?
9.4.
Okay.
Against the cap. And most of it was guarantees.
Right. Yep. That's a little high for running backs, but dude has earned it, man. I mean, you know, nobody wants to tackle him. I mean, you need a guy like that and a leader like that. I think what the Cardinals really need to do is surround him. Now that they have Michael Carter, Amari DiMeccardo had that nice second run yesterday. That was a deep from him. I really like that kid. He had 3 rushes for 15 yards, 5.0. I mean, I think there's something special about him. You know, that's three good runners they'd have under contract for next year: Connor, Carter, and DiMeccardo. And I imagine they're going to probably draft another running back. Keontre Ingram looks, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe he has a renaissance next year. I mean, he's shown flashes, but he's been, you know, off and on injured. I don't know about that. But the three of them look like perfect complements to all, you know. I mean, I think Amari is the best pass protector of the three. Plus, he's a gritty inside runner. Carter's got the bounce inside, outside, and the receiving skills. He's a classic, you know, versatile running back too. And Connor, you know, is like a bell cow. But I have no problems paying him $8 million for the leadership, being the captain, and how hard he runs. I mean, you want to play physical, you got a guy who can do it. And at such a high level.
Plus, if you're willing to convert that base salary into signing bonus, that number goes down to just below $5 million.
Oh, but does it kick it?
That would require Bidwell to pay him the $3.7 million up front as a signing bonus in restructuring his contract, which depends whether they do that or not.
Yeah, I think probably they might do something like that to keep him around. How old is he now?
I know this is his 7th season, but I think he was a little older when he came out of school. He is 28. He'll be 29 next year.
That's not bad. You know, it's not bad. Just really, really have respect for who he is as a person and what he brings to the table physically, mentally, in leadership. He's got the full package, and he's made a Pro Bowl while here, so in his first year. So, I mean, if it were me, next week I'm going to talk about, you know, I'm going to think long and hard this week about the changes I think the Cardinals need to make. And, you know, I mean, I fear it's just all going to get pushed off to next year. Nothing's going to be done. And we're going to suffer through the rest, you know, same old next year. You know, I can't imagine Gannon. He didn't only attracted one Philly guy. Well, maybe two with Shashir, who doesn't play much on defense. I mean, I don't know if Gannon can attract any free agents.
I think that's about done now with the Philly connection, especially because their current DC, Sean Desai, is going to be, you know, if a defensive coach is going to get hired, he's probably the one who might get hired for a head coaching job this cycle.
Yeah, you know, they're, but it's going to be so much harder these days for defensive coaches. Now, I feel bad for Steve Wilkes because he so earned that Carolina job. And now Frank Reich is out today.
Well, there's still time to right wrongs, am I right? They just can hire Steve Wilkes again at the end of this season. They can still right their wrongs.
Yeah, but we need, no matter who it is, put it this way. If we're not moving off from Kyler, we got drafting a new quarterback, right? Who do you want to put his fate in the hands of?
Oh, I meant Steve Wilkes in Carolina. I'm not saying Steve Wilkes come back to Arizona.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that might not be a bad idea, to tell you the truth.
No. Steve Wilkes, please don't come to Arizona. Like, for both sides, I think we'd both be better off with him going somewhere else. I meant there's still time for Carolina to right the wrongs of bringing back Steve Wilkes.
And that makes sense. I mean, he's not coming back to Arizona.
No, I think it's mutually agreeable. I think both sides agree on him not coming back to Arizona.
Right. When you have a lawsuit against the organization going, that's not going to happen. So, I just want to think about this, but I'm totally convinced. I mean, I'll just give, you know, a hint at this is that we need, regardless, we need to turn this thing over to an offensive-minded head coach. We got to. We have no choice. If you want to do what's best for Kyler, you got to get a guy in here who's going to push him and not kowtow to him and, you know, kiss his butt. I mean, that's not working with Kyler. It's just not. You know, Kyler's hard enough on himself, but he needs someone to push him beyond and get him beyond where he is now. Because this is just unacceptable, the way he's playing. It's so late, so tentative. He's like a Hamlet back there. He thinks too much. That's his problem. He doesn't let it rip. He's now like just mind scrambled and thinking too much. We need an offensive coach who has the wisdom and the wherewithal to snap him out of that and get him back on track and let him be the Kyler we saw back in 2012 for the first 2 months of that season, where he was playing at his best. So, either way, I think if you're hanging on to Kyler, you need an offensive coach. If you're trading Kyler and you're going to draft a quarterback in the first round with either the first pick you have or the second pick, seeing as it's a deep classic quarterbacks, I like this kid McCarthy from Michigan in a Petzing style offense, but I think we need someone with more experience than Petzing, and I know we do. I mean, Petzing's a bright mind, and I think he's got a good future. He's just, I mean, it's almost unfair to him to go from quarterback coach to OC. Because, you know, you got to call plays for 60 minutes. I mean, it's not just choreographing the first down. You got to be in lockstep with your quarterbacks. And now, after, you know, a good showing early, like Dobbs had, and now what Kyler had, both Dobbs and Kyler regressing into this, like, overthink, hold on to the ball too long. Balls are coming out fluttering. I mean, can't get a two-minute drill going. There are too many still, late snaps. It's just not happening. And we need someone with a better plan and more experience to come in here and change those things. So I'm going to think of candidates. You know, I like the guy Johnson in Detroit a lot. I think he could be a difference maker. Dana Holgorsen of Houston was just let go as head coach. He wasn't winning as a head coach, but that guy is you know, one of the great spread offensive coordinators in the world. I mean,
he was on the original Iowa Wesleyan team all those years ago with Hal Mumme and Mike Leach in them. So he's been indoctrinated from the very beginning with that offense.
Right. And he helped coach, you know, Clayton Tune to nearly 12,000 yards of passing, and almost four of which went to Tank Dell. And 40 of the touchdowns of his 104, I think, went to Tank Dell. You know, there are guys around. I mean, and he knows a guy named Jake Spivitzel, who's a, you know, I think Kyler needs to go back to his roots. He needs to go play in a spread. And, but with movement out of a shotgun, not with, you know, you can do bootlegs, waggles, and pocket shifts and sprint outs, all of that out of a shotgun. Kyler prefers it that way. I don't have a problem with that. But yes, I like to see him playing under center to do those bootlegs, but no team does those bootlegs and stuff more than five or six times a game. It's just the way, you know, it's just unsustainable because other teams are going to send the linebacker, you know, other teams know how to defend that after a while. And sometimes you just get stuck with a guy in your face. And I know that's something Kyler's probably fearing, and I don't blame him. But you can maneuver launching points from all over the field. And a lot of these spread guys know how to do it. Holgerson does. You do a better job of teaching your quarterbacks how to maneuver around a pocket. And something that, you know, it's been tough for Kyler. It's not something he really has ever done. You know, and I'm not sure, you know, he can't do it, but he'd have to be willing and able to, you know, practice it. I mean, just buy that one extra second with a shift to the feet and then plant your feet and boom, let it go. I don't see why he can't do that. Now he's going to take more hits like he did yesterday doing that. That's always a concern. But Clayton Tune, you know, I think he'll probably get some run here over the next few games. I hope so. Anyway, I didn't see any point yesterday in having Kyler play in the fourth quarter, any piece of that. And yeah, it was good for stats, and he got his yards up over 200 and stuff, and made it and got a touchdown there that made it look better than what it actually was. But it was against second stringers, and you know, I'm not sure that's going to inflate Kyler's confidence. And he was noticeably limping coming off the field, which is really, really depressing and unfortunate, and the kind of thing we're most worried about him coming back too soon was integrating into an offense he hasn't played before with such little practice and at the risk of injury. And yesterday, both of those worries came to full fruition. And fortunately, it doesn't look like Kyler's seriously injured, unless this is more than what we saw. But Steelers next week before the bye. Get some Mike Tomlin defense. It's going to have its challenges. And, when they just fired their offensive coordinator, and they had one of their better games offensively yesterday.
I think it's safe to say it was their best, because it was the first time they went over 400 yards since week 2 of 2020. Right. And it was the first time this year they outgained their opponent, and they outgained the Bengals by like 200 yards. So I think it might be their best game on offense in like 4 years.
Yeah. Pickett had a couple of good catches from, Pickett to Pickens. It was a nice combo in that game. I mean, so
Pat Freiermuth had like 10 catches, and I don't think I've seen a Steelers receiver have 10 catches in like 4 years.
Yeah. And then, of course, there'll be Patrick Peterson on the Steelers. Oh, boy. That's always a treat, huh?
This will be fun, which it's not in Arizona, so he won't get to do something like, you know, stand on the logo after an interception or something. But yeah, Patrick Peterson playing the Cardinals again.
He's got a 58.1 with a 30.0 tackling grade and a 59.4 coverage grade. Yikes. But 75.3 on the pass rush. He's gotten two pressures on blitzes. He's always been good at that, if he can make the tackle. He's played 10 games. He's got 700 snaps. So, you know, he's a fixture over there. I'm surprised that those numbers based on their pass rush abilities. I mean, TJ Watt, 91.0. He's maybe the best edge rusher. He and Bosa, right? Highsmith.
Micah Parsons wants to get in there too.
Yeah, Parsons. Yep. And Marcus Golden.
We didn't
even
mention Myles Garrett.
And we didn't mention Marcus Golden, who's 79.7 over there as a rotational edge player. Not had a lot. He's had 143 snaps, but still he's got three sacks, six pressures. So, Nick Herbig, ever heard of him? He's the Wisconsin kid. He's got a high grade. Those edge players are the top four grades on that defense. And then Armon Watts, Elijah Riley, safety Keanu Benton was a rookie we really liked. He's at 71.9. Joey Porter Jr., the rookie, 70.5. Haven't shown up really well. Landon Roberts, who I've always liked. He was for years on the Patriots, 69.5. He's one of the better inside linebackers. Cameron Hayward, four games and 68.4. So, they've got a safety in DeMonte Casey. I've always liked.
He's DeMonte Casey. Yep. San Diego State. Yeah. Back. Yes. But he's older now. He was there when I was going to San Diego State games when I was in high school. He's one of our older guys now.
I always liked him. Minka Fitzpatrick.
I assume Minka's still out because he's going to be gone for a while.
Yeah, yep, that hurts them for sure. But, so in the Steel City at an Eastern Coast game, be an interesting, environment for the Cardinals to play. See if they have a response from what happened this week. Tough environment to play over there with the terrible towels. Something says to me we may not see Kyler this week. It might make sense to have him rest this week and the bye week after three games, particularly if that knee is, I don't know what he was slipping on, if it looked like the knee. I don't know if it's on his right knee or his left knee. It looked like his right knee came down kind of awkwardly when he was trying to skip pressure there and got twirled around in the pocket, and it just may have twinged it. But Kyle VandenBosch got on Arizona Sports Radio this week with, I think it was, Vince and Bickley, or it might have been Gambo, Wolf. Had him on, and yeah, it was Wolf or Wolf and Burns. He had him on, and there was he was saying like he'd come back from an ACL and how painful it is after playing in your first few games with it. Even though the rehab went great, you know, it's still a process of getting back in football shape and having it, you know, respond. And, you know, it's just so risky for the Cardinals to do this. And, you know, in certain ways, I feel for Kyler on this one. I mean, Kyler is wanting to please the new coaching staff. And he's done, you know, everything he's supposed to do in his rehab. He himself said he probably could have come back sooner. He's been feeling fine for a while, which is kind of mind-boggling to me that they wouldn't have brought him back sooner if they're going to bring him back at all. But I guess, you know, it was the plan all along, and I've heard this from some reliable sources, this was the plan all along, was to play him week 10 and, you know, take it from there. And be that as it may, I'm not sure how this helps things any. I don't know what it means moving forward, how we're supposed to react to this either. But I will tell you that we'll go back to this and finish with this point. When Kyler was scrubbing his socials and, you know, thinking about his NFL future, the things that he was, you know, reported to me through two pretty reliable sources were that he wanted to be on a team with an elite defense. That ain't happening. You know, I mean, look at what the defense did for Kyler last week. Just totally getting annihilated in the first half. Look at this week. When Kyler comes down and scores, takes a lead. I mean, the defense hung in there for a little while until, you know, I mean, that fourth and that was an unfortunate call and you know, lack of conversion there because it gave the Rams a short field and they went down and scored and made it 21-8. Everything got away from that. The second half, the defense was horrible. I mean, you know, if you're Kyler Murray looking at this, how long is it going to take to get and have a coach in here who can coach the defense up against a Sean McVay offense? That'd be a huge question mark. Then an array of talented receivers. You know, and you just don't see Kyler. He had a little thing going there with Hopkins for a while. And then Hollywood last year, there was a stretch of games where it was looking good. But, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, we haven't really seen a super good, strong connection between Hollywood and Kyler yet. And Hollywood's been injured and, like, game-time decisions. And it hasn't been on the practice field, which makes it all more difficult. It goes shades of Hopkins. I mean, you know, on the other side, we saw Matthew Stafford. He jives with guys. I mean, look at the way he's taken to Nacua. I mean, unbelievable. The numbers on the kid's putting up. I mean, Stafford just, you know, gets a guy under his wing and they just go up, you know, and practice. Stafford reps it so often, it becomes second nature, like he did with Cooper Kupp all the way to a Super Bowl championship. I mean, their relationship and their workout ethic together and their synchronicities were off the charts. And that's what you kind of need. And you would hope you'd get that from Kyler and one of his best friends. But never really seen Kyler get too locked in on a receiver. For a while there, Hopkins, when he first got Hopkins, it was like really. Now, there were a lot of games where they were disconnecting too, probably because of lack of practice, because of Hopkins taking practices off. But, you know, I'm not sure. Let me put it this way. Kyler's looking at this current group of receivers and licking his chops. I think he likes McBride for sure. I think he likes Dort. He's starting to like Dort and getting, well, how about that touchdown by Dort yesterday? Awesome. I mean, he's a guy, throw the ball more to get it to Dort. I mean, he's, and that late, the deep pass to Dort was on the money. Just needed to be thrown a little sooner, I think. A little more air, and I think Dort might have been able to outrun it. But yeah, I mean, and then, but then with the prospect of Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, then I think Kyler would get really excited. So on that potential, yes. But I mean, this puts Kyler in a pickle because, you know, if he wants Marvin Harrison Jr., he has to try to stifle the urge to win. You know, everything about this season is just so paradoxical. And, you know, just an array of contradictions and one foot in, one foot out. You know, do we really want to win? Don't we really want to lose? And anytime you get in a situation like that, it's horrible for a football team. I mean, look at, you know, look at what happened to the BC coach who coached for the Dolphins and his Brian lawsuit. Flores. Who interviewed? Yes, Brian Flores. I mean, you know, how dubious is it when you're told as a coach to tank games? And how are you trying to win the trust of your players if you're doing that? Man, I can't imagine players in the building feeling like really warm and fuzzy about Gannon. I mean, you know, I can't imagine it. Because, you know, I mean, he's this what they're preparing him, you know, what they're getting out of that defense is just lucky to get a decent quarter out of him, maybe even a half, but the rest is just brutal. I don't think that helps a coach's confidence and or the confidence that the players have in the coach. So, you know, and looking at the Cardinals' schedule, it's all tough games. Steelers on the road. You got Eagles on the road. Boy, that game's going to be, wow, what a boo fest is coming Gannon's way in that game. You know, then you've got Bears on the road. That one's the most winnable one, apparently. But the Bears, you know, have been playing better lately.
Hell, the Bears should have beat the Lions. They threw that game away at the end, but they dominated the Lions for 3.5 quarters.
Right. They've got some things going there. Plus, they picked up Sweat, the D end, which was a great move, I thought, on their parts. Paving the way for their future. So that's really the only game that I think the Cardinals probably have a better chance of winning. I mean, you got Seahawks at home. You got the 49ers at home. Ooh. I'm going to guess right now Kyler doesn't play in that game. Probably by both the coaches and his own agreement. But then again, here's another thing. If you have to protect a guy like the Cardinals did, they didn't want him coming back to play the Browns, you know, in that game. I mean, if you got a situation where, again, it's like one foot in, one foot out. Should we do it? Should we not? It's no way to play football, put it that way. You got to be locked in and focused and do everything you can during the week to try to win. And then on Sunday to, you know, put a game plan out there that's going to reward the players for their hard work all week. And that's not happening. So they got to do something about that. All right. Kyle, any parting shots?
Well, I don't think I have any parting shots. We're going to see what happens the rest of the way for them. But I guess I've used this the last couple weeks to update the draft positioning, but the nothing's changed in the draft positioning. Everyone won this week, or I'm sorry, everyone lost this week who was at the top of the draft. Yeah. So there were no changes in the draft order other than Carolina no longer having a coach. And now Tommy DeVito's won two games in a row. So I guess the Giants are out of the shooting for a draft pick game at this point.
Right. Yep.
But the Cardinals are number two, and a lot of it's out of their control because they haven't had a bye week yet. So when that happens, you know, we'll see if that changes the results in either direction. Either Carolina finally gets a win or New England gets a win or something like that.
Right. And if New England does not get a win, they are a lock to get either one or two. Nothing worse than that. So
yes.
Because they have the weaker schedule. And so any tie with the Cardinals would be would go in their favor. So that means the Cardinals would be picking three if they don't win another game.
Let's see. So, does New England have a winnable game left on their schedule? Let's see. They have... Oh, they're home against the Chargers next week. They could win that game. I know it's Bailey Zappi, but they could win that.
Right.
And then they still have another game against Tim Boyle's Jets.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Yep. Yeah. Get the Jets before Aaron Rodgers comes back.
I don't think that one's going to happen. Just going out on a limb, I don't think that's going to happen. Given that the Jets would have to go 6-0 the rest of the season to have a chance of making the playoffs, I don't think that's going to happen.
Really? They'd have to go win all of them?
Well,
what's their record?
They're 4-7, and you could go 9-8, but if you go 9-8 in this year's AFC, you're leaving yourself open to tiebreakers. To guarantee a playoff spot, you got to get to 10-7 in the AFC. You could theoretically get there at 9-8, but 9-8, you're playing five. You're playing with tiebreakers.
Right. Good point. Yeah.
Which is why the Chargers are done now, too, because the Chargers are 4-7 and they could, again, get to 9-8, but 9-8 is probably going to get you in tiebreaker.
Yeah. Well, a lot of coaching changes, I think, are going to happen this year. I think Staley's out in San Diego.
I wish it was still San Diego. Yeah.
I know.
You know, so Carolina's available. Chicago might be available. Washington probably. Todd Bowles is a question mark in Tampa. Staley, Vegas is already open. You know, there might be one or two surprises in there, like our guy McDermott, or you know, Mike McCarthy, or something like that,
or Belichick.
I'll let the cards fall as they may with that one. I'm not even going to speculate what's going to happen on that one. But even if you count if you don't count Belichick, that's like we just named eight that are probably going to be open.
Yeah.
Without mentioning the Cardinals, which is up in the air.
And then you're going to have the scramble for offensive minded head coaches because of these quarterbacks in this draft.
Just not a very deep pool of candidates either. Like it's a lot of first time coaches that are on the market, or maybe they go the college ranks. Like I think one of these teams might go after Kalen DeBoer over there in Washington, but who knows?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, I could see that. And I mean, if Lincoln Riley wanted to make the jump to pro, this would probably be the year to do it. I imagine he'd get a lot of interest, despite the tough stretch they had, you know, late in the season this year with Caleb. But I could
see sticking around at USC. I feel pretty confident he'll be sticking around at USC.
You think?
I feel confident. I don't know for sure, but I feel pretty confident he's at USC for a little while, because this thing's just getting started with him at USC. Like they're still only in year two. He's bringing in his recruits and a new defensive coordinator and stuff.
Yeah. good point. I get you. Yeah. But the allure of the NFL, especially because it's becoming more and more of a college type offense of game, is, I mean, it's, after all, it's the NFL, and you know, it's tempting. And if the right scenario came around, like a package deal with him and Caleb Williams, I could see it happen.
It could, I mean, but we said the same thing about Kyler Murray. We said the same thing about Baker Mayfield. You know, he's just kind of, he's gone through this for years and years now. There were talks about the Cowboys were going to hire him. You know, it's like every year it could be the year Lincoln Riley goes to the pros. And this year, also USC is about to move to the Big Ten, which I know he wasn't thrilled about, but I feel like he's going to give it a shot in the Big Ten and see what happens first.
Okay.
It's also that job pays him pretty well too.
He's getting cha-chinged, but that's why I thought this year might make sense, in the sense that, you know, they're transitioning into a schedule that's, you know, brand new, and, you know, a lot of moving parts and a lot of mileage, added extra mileage. And I feel sad about that. I really always liked the Pac-10 and liked their brand of football, and liked the, you know, the kind of high scoring offenses that they've had over the years. So, you know, but looks like Chip Kelly's holding on to his job at UCLA. So,
yeah, that one was weird because they had their best season in a decade last year and they weren't terrible this year. But I think, from what I understand, people who are boosters at the university just don't like him. I think that's kind of the thing that I've taken away from that. They just think he's kind of annoying.
Yeah. And, but he's still a masterful offensive mind. What do you think about Ryan Day?
He'll be sticking at Ohio State because Ohio State can't do better than him. But he also has lost to Michigan 3 years in a row at this point, which is, it's funny how that flipped, right? This is the thing that we said about Harbaugh 3 years ago, is like, well, Michigan can't do better than him and he can't do better than Michigan. So they're stuck with each other. And I think at one point, he took a pay cut on a contract with Michigan. And it's funny how you just flip that one result of Ohio State, Michigan. And now Ryan Day's the coach where Ohio State can't do better than him, but he can't do better than Ohio State. So they're stuck with each other. It's funny how flipping that one result just changed the entire narrative around those two coaches.
Right. Yeah.
I do not think Ryan Day will be going to the NFL because I don't think that's going to work. I don't think Ryan Day going to the NFL would be a good idea, but who knows? I suspect he'll stay.
Right. But I guess there's that stat, he's like 1-5 or 6 against top 5 teams.
Yep. Which is the problem. It's like, yeah, he beats all of the teams he's supposed to, but he loses the games that his fan base cares about, and now the fan base is upset at him, which is, you know, tough spot to be in.
Before he got there, they were dominating Michigan. So,
yeah. And I think those two things are not mutually exclusive. Like, they are not as good now as the machine that they had 6 years ago. But also Michigan is having a renaissance because they're getting recruits that previously might have gone to Ohio State or gone to Penn State. And that's working out great for Michigan, is that they're getting the offensive linemen that might have gone to Ohio State in a previous era, or, you know, the running backs. I'm still going to say, if any college coach is going to make the jump, it's probably, the best bet would be Kalen DeBoer over there in Washington. Like, that's one that I think would translate well to the NFL. Even if you don't bring Michael Penix with him to the team that he's going to, I think that would be the guy if you're a team in the NFL trying to hire a college coach.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. Yeah, it's exciting time of year for the bowl games and the conference championships next week. And playoff picture's getting pretty vivid in the NFL. It's always fun if your team is, you know, got a horse in the race. And, you know, it's tough for those of us who don't. But, you know, just hope you see good things from your team, good direction and good development. You know, there's some good things going on. It's just, but some very fundamentally troubling aspects about how they're doing things. And you just wonder if just doesn't give us much hope for the future. So we'll see. In the interim, thanks to Kyle, as always, for his, input, feedback, and producing of the show. And to all of you at Twitter, keep it rolling. I'm just going to keep trying to say my piece, and you can keep firing back. And we can agree to disagree at times or agree to agree. That's what that forum's for. And the Revenge of the Birds, we get daily discussions going that I think are really worthwhile to engage in and to have a voice in and on a consistent basis. And so join us there if you haven't already. And to all of you Cardinal fans, may the red rain shower down on you into a red, red sea. Red rain.